Luke 22, and we'll pick up in verse 63. Luke 22, 63. Now the men who held Jesus mocked him and beat him, and having blindfolded him, they struck him on the face and asked him, saying, "Prophesy, who is the one who struck you?" And many other things they blasphemously spoke against Jesus. Kaufman's comment on these three verses are, there were six mockeries of Jesus in all. All of the mockeries were due to the instinctive hatred of carnal and unregenerated men for holiness and truth. Especially reprehensible in this glimpse of the mockeries provided by Luke was the fact of it being proclaimed by the religious leaders of the Jews. It might have been expected at the hands of the Roman soldiers, long accustomed to the deeds of blood and violence, but it was especially shameful that the priest would have allowed such a thing. Verse 66. As soon as it was day, the elders of the people, both chief priests and scribes, came together and led him into their council, saying... Now, this is the Sanhedrin gives the death verdict over these for the rest of the chapter here. And Kaufman's comment on this verse is, the night trials of Jesus were illegal, but also was this gathering of the Sanhedrin on the preparation day of the Passover, a high festival upon which no trial of any kind whatever was legal. Of course, the purpose of this assembly, the third in six trials of Jesus, was to lend some semblance of legality to the preliminary trials that were held the night before. So they had the illegal trials before with the Jews and with the Sanhedrin and before the two high priests, and those were illegal. So now they're putting them before Roman council and before Pilate in the daylight, and to what Kaufman said, try to form some form of semblance that this is legitimate when what they had done was illegal the night before. Okay, verse 67 through 69. So then the chief priests, elders, and scribes led Jesus into the council. So now Jesus is before the Sanhedrin. And they said to Jesus, in verse 67, if you are the Christ, tell us. But Jesus said to them, if I tell you, you will by no means believe. And if I also ask you, you will by no means answer me or let me go. Hereafter, the Son of Man will sit on the right hand of the power of God. Kaufman's comment on these three verses is, this 10-second summary of the three trials of Jesus, which occupied the whole of a long night and a full dress rehearsal after daylight, does not give 1% of all that was said and done. There were many questions, answers, charges, restatements, and repetitions throughout the long trial that Jesus endured at the hands of these Israelites. So, here, Luke summarized in three verses things that went, and Kaufman says this is a 10-second summary of the three trials, but this was hours and hours that Luke gave a very brief summary of. And then he continues, one of the gospel accounts giving a question or an answer in a slightly different form from another account may not be intelligently advocated as a contradiction or discrepancy. Everything that is written in all of the gospel accounts is totally and unequivocally true, there being no honest way to deny a word of it. And then when Jesus says, if I tell you, you will not believe. Jesus had indeed told them many times that he was the Messiah, but they did not believe that. And telling them again would not change that. And he had not only told them that he was the Messiah, he had demonstrated for the last 3.5 years to these scribes, priests, Pharisees, but also all the people, which the people believed him for the most part. But it was this Jewish hierarchy that was refusing to. But he had demonstrated with all of these miracles that he had performed. So he had shown them that he was the Messiah, as well as telling them, and they didn't want to believe any of it. Now, when Jesus said, "If I ask you, you will not answer," Kaufman said, "there are several examples of this in the gospel accounts. Those evil rulers were not able to answer Jesus' questions. They could not stand against him in open discussion. And even in this trial, they refused to answer his arguments." And then we know these several examples. Jesus would question them, and they would say, "We don't know the answer," or "We cannot answer that," or they would refuse to answer. Because he put them in a catch-22 that they were trying to put him into, and he would just reverse it right on them. And so he's saying the same thing about what has happened in the previous years, months and years, that he asked them questions and they wouldn't answer. Okay, and now when Jesus said, "Hereafter you will see the Son of Man seated at the right hand of the power of God," Kaufman writes, This is an emphatic declaration from the lips of Jesus that he was indeed the divine Messiah, a supernatural person in possession of the very power of God. And it must be pointed out that the Sanhedrin fully understood it as such, thus making them much more perceptive than those who blindly ignore the impact of this declaration. So the Sanhedrin realized that Jesus was the Son of God, and they rightly say that they are here. They understand what Jesus is saying here in verse 70. "Then they all said," so the Sanhedrin, the 70 men, "Are you then the Son of God?" So Jesus said to them, "You rightly say that I am." So they fully understood that Jesus was once again declaring that he was the Messiah. And Kaufman's comment on this is, "The phrasing of the question, 'Are you then the Son of God?' is proof that the Sanhedrin understood the meaning of Jesus' reply. When Jesus said, 'You rightly say that I am,' that has the weight of, 'Yes, at last you have seen the point of what I am saying.' It is a gross error to understand these words as anything except the most positive affirmation that Jesus was, is, and ever will be the Son of God. The expression is equivalent to 'yes.'" So I guess through the years there's been commentators that have denied that Jesus was saying that he was the Messiah. And Kaufman's saying there's no other conclusion that you can get other than he is admitting that he is the Messiah. Okay, verse 71. "And they said," the Sanhedrin, "what further testimony do we need? For we have heard it ourselves from his own mouth." And Kaufman's comment here is, "By the sheer power of morality and intellect, Jesus at last forced the hierarchy of the Jews into using the only charge that he would permit them to use, namely his claim to be the divine Messiah. All of the other charges which they had so maliciously advocated against him for so long, such as Sabbath breaking or casting out demons by the power of the devil, all dropped out of sight here. Even that garbled quote about destroying the temple and the only reason the leaders had for demanding Jesus' death came into view here. That being that Jesus made himself the Son of God." So that's the accusation that they're going to crucify him on. "That was the issue that Jesus chose to seal the blood of the cross, and the fury of the Sanhedrin at being forced to face the issue became apparent in their deceitful conduct before Pilate." And then the conclusion of two paragraphs here. "This, of course, was the death penalty pronounced by the sacred court of the Jews. But the fact of the death penalty having been removed from the Jews' jurisdiction, sent the next phase of the trial into the courts of the Gentiles. Wonderful was the appearance of Jesus in these fantastic trials, wherein he so gloriously attested his eternal power and Godhead. The Sanhedrin could put on trial and could condemn, but could not put Jesus to death without the concurring sentence of the Roman governor. To obtain this sentence, they now lead Jesus before Pilate in the early dawn, having made good use of their time. His trial before Pilate is told in chapter 23, which we'll plan to cover next week.